This is CliffCentral.com.
Clockwork Media is 4 years old, and it boasts over 80 permanent staff, a portfolio of brands that include some of the world's biggest business names, Microsoft, NBC, Universal, Seacom. Those are the guys who make the internet possible, right?
Indeed.
Yeah. Console, Glass, Investec, many others. And I've got the two guys who started it, Tom and Nick, here with me this morning. It's nice to see you guys.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thanks. Thank you. It's great to be here.
So after only four and a bit years?
Yeah, thereabouts, yeah.
It's quite something to have those clients and to have built the business that you guys have at Clockwork Media. Very, very nice. Congratulations.
Thank Thanks very Thanks. Much. Yeah, it's been quite a wild ride.
Yeah.
Building something. It's funny. I mean, I guess in public company terms, or you know, the kinds of companies that we as consumers engage with on a day-to-day basis, 80 people seems kind of small and pretty insignificant. But if you've built that, you know, it's quite a intense experience, especially if you don't have any prior experience of owning or building a company before. I think you know exactly what it's about. So
yeah, but I mean, you guys deserve a lot of credit for, first of all, having the balls to start a company like this at this time in this country, and second of all, for having been able to scale it up as quickly as you have. I love hearing stories like this. That's kind of the hidden agenda behind getting you in here to talk to me. I'm curious about how it all works.
Yeah, look, I think there was never a clear intent to build a business like it is today. I think, you know, Nick and I are two ex-journalists, and we had a skill that we thought the market wasn't getting enough of, you know, which was at the time good writing skills, you know, good writing capabilities. And it started simply from that, and we just built it from that point to what it is today. So, you know, I think a lot of entrepreneurs and entrepreneurial stories kind of weave around the idea that there's this grand vision. It really doesn't always have to be that way. I mean, it literally just started with a piece of writing.
So it's what you studied, English, and you did journalism.
Yeah, more or less. I studied philosophy and media at Wits, so BA, yeah.
Cool. And what was your idea then?
For me, I wanted to pursue journalism and, and writing. I was obsessed with like technology and also specifically video games. So I wanted to write about them. And there were at the time quite a few niche publications like PC Format Magazine and NAG Magazine and stuff. And I wanted to write about, you know, that stuff. So yeah, I managed to get my first job out of uni at MyBroadband. And then Tom joined me about 2 years later or a year later. Tom started working at MyBroadband. We worked together, and then, yeah, the rest kind of just unfolded organically.
MyBroadband was a very clever thing to have started when it did, and also they really developed a very good reputation early on for being able to get to things and be able to talk about things that very few people outside of the sort of tech world knew about. And then slowly they became very mainstream, and it wasn't a bad thing for them.
No, absolutely. I think that is also a great story. Rudolph and Cara. I think Tom and I both owe a lot to them in terms of learnings and like sort of career head start stuff. It's a very interesting publication if you look at where it came from as being really the place that people went to go to the forum to express how dissatisfied they were with the state of internet and broadband in the country about, what, 10 years ago? To what it is now, which is just like a huge tech and then some kind of publication. So, yeah, it's incredible.
Well, it's still, I think, in the top 10 sites in South Africa, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's done very, very well.
Yeah, it is.
Millions of hits. I mean, we drew a lot from the experience. I mean, Nick was their first hire. He was the first journalist.
Really?
Yeah. I was the second. So we learned a lot very, very quickly from Rudolph and Cara in terms of how to do journalism, you know, journalistic rigor, critical thinking, being able to unpack complex, you know, things like broadcast and broadband and the legislation that revolves around it. So, I mean, what are we like? I was like 22, 23 years old. So figuring that out.
From that experience did you think would be able to serve you in setting up Clockwork?
I remember really being drilled very hard by Rudolph on what a good story requires and the structure of what makes great content. And because the response on my broadband is real time, we had access to the figures and the stats behind every story, and we were required to post X amount of stories a day. So you'd learn every single day in terms of what was working. People would flame you on the forums as soon as you published something. So I think there was no better experience to kind of drill you into push you into a particular direction in terms of understanding what human human behavior around the consumption of content and how to kind of create it in a way that is legible and interesting, you know, specifically for the internet. So I think that helped us tremendously, because when we pushed forward and started doing writing work, which was the foundation for Clockwork, I think we had a defining factor that there that no one else necessarily did.
And it's probably about that ability to tell stories and to tell them well.
Totally, yeah.
You know, for brands these days, that's a challenge, because a lot of the time they're focused on their business strategy, their customers, their staff, their shareholders, all that kind of thing. It doesn't make for a good story.
No, yeah, I think that's the big dynamic that's shifting at the moment, because clients and, I guess, brands, you know, let's refer to them in this conversation as brands, they're starting to realize more that the conversation is about how they relate to the communities in which they work or that they serve, as opposed to how those communities serve them by buying their products. So you have to be more part of an ecosystem now as a brand than you do, you know, you should force your operational structure on everyone that exists around
you.
Yeah,
it's not a top-down thing anymore.
Exactly,
right?
Yeah. So, I mean, if you look at, we were in a meeting earlier, you know, chatting about General Electric. It's probably the most overused example of a business that's done this, but it's a really boring company, actually.
Mm.
But if you dig into, you know, some of the stuff that they do, it's amazing. So, you know, about 5-10 years ago, they started embarking on a content-driven approach, where instead of speaking about their share price and their organizational structure and how the business works, they started talking about what they do and how that impacts people's lives in terms of medicine or aircraft or whatever.
Don't General Electric have most of the patents that were ever filed by Edison?
Quite possibly. It's an insane company.
Yeah, it's huge, and they do incredible work. So, I mean, it's not boring. It's finding those things about each organization, the service, the brand, or whatever it is, the product, that make that unique, to make it interesting, right?
Exactly.
I mean, and is that what you guys focus on largely?
Yeah, I think so. As a business, that's kind of the underlying ethos.
Is that
ethos.
A PR thing, or is it a straightforward advertising?
I don't believe in the concept of PR as PR has been for the last 30 or 40 years, because PR fundamentally is public relations, and everything that we do is designed to have a relationship with the public. So PR is more kind of storytelling. It's focused on that. And to answer your question, yes, this business is very focused on creating content for brands that helps them tell that story. But it doesn't mean that we're limited to social media, or we're kind of like, I hate this term, channel agnostic. You know, no, but like, you know, we're not.
There's so many terms. The other day, it was just 2 days ago, I used the word bespoke, and 3 or 4 people rolled
their eyes.
That's
a good one. That's a good one.
The other one is artisanal. and they're all these
artisanal
words.
Artisanal gin.
Yeah, people, they're creating a whole language that is just so up their own backsides, it's not even interesting to listen to, right?
Yeah,
but then I think also, I was talking to a friend the other day, like, the problem is that those words and those things are actually, they can be inherently cool things. Like, bespoke things are cool.
Yeah, of course they are.
But there's this
now
runaway trend.
They've been bastardized by the advertising business.
Yeah.
blame advertising. When in doubt, just blame advertising.
That's all of us.
Yeah.
But we have to, you know, we have to keep kind of finding new ways to make things pop. And to do that is often a very difficult and challenging part of the business. It's a lot of stuff people go, oh, well, I know that. I can tell you what this product does, or I can tell you what that brand stands for. But they don't really. And a lot of the time, these things change.
Mm.
So you have to be ready to adapt to that change almost instantly. Mm. It can be very, very hard.
I don't think people necessarily care, to be honest with you, as much as they used to.
You know, yeah, I don't think people care as much as the marketers think they care. Yeah.
Oh, definitely.
That's
definitely,
Like, you know, you'll see them, they'll argue for 3/4 of an hour about which way a stripe on a billboard should go. And they're like, they don't even realize that the amount of time that someone on the highway is going to look at that stripe is probably inversely proportional to the amount of time they've spent talking about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's a challenging one, overanalyzing human behavior versus just doing what comes from, you know, within, or going with your gut.
Let me ask you on that note, because there's a lot, because of digital media now and the ability to measure things to the nth degree, and this is probably something you would have discussed in your days at MyBroadband too, that now we know the statistics, the metadata around how people behave. But does that take the joy out of it? Like, can you still do something in an authentic human way and just see where it goes? Or does everything have to be measured and accounted for now? In other words, has even the creative world and the advertising world been completely taken over by accountants and statisticians?
Data.
Yeah, I think it's a big conversation that's going on within our industry at the moment. And I would hazard to say that everyone thinks they're using data, but no one actually has any clue what to do with it. Yeah. So the reality is that we've all got these big repositories of information, but no one's really using it correctly. So the truth of the matter is that if they say they are, they're probably not. And there's a heck of a lot of fraud that's going on behind, like programmatic media buying and stuff like
Absolutely.
That. That's creating a lot of doubt that underpins that. So I think at the end of the day, there's a fundamental truth that's associated with advertising. That
and also, what do you know for sure about 5 million impressions? What do you know about that?
Exactly, yeah.
What does that tell you?
Look, I think Mark Zuckerberg is probably he probably knows, but I mean, Facebook knows. But does the advertising agency off the street know? I think, you know, it's something that you have to mix human emotion and understanding with the data.
And everything's different in a different context, right? I mean, South Africa is a very unique sort of context for this kind of conversation to be happening in. We can't rely entirely on statistics, and you could come in as a master of data, and you wouldn't understand the market even if we gave you all the data, because the people, the way they speak, the way they behave, the history, the culture, it's all very, very different. So you have to have a mix of both.
Yeah, absolutely. So one of my big gripes at the moment is that, you know, a lot of global businesses are trying to centralize their content creation and push it into countries like South Africa, just assuming that overarching message is going to work. But it doesn't. It doesn't. It's not localized. It's not sensitive to the things you were talking about. You know, the vernacular that we encounter on a day-to-day basis is stuff that is just not understood by someone sitting in London. And they never will get it, you know. So I think the importance of localization and local understanding can't be understated. It's so important.
So what is your favorite part of doing what you do on a daily basis in your business? I mean, what do you love to get down to?
Okay, so... I'll go first.
Yeah, go, Nick.
Go first.
I think it's...
Nick. You go first.
Can
I think maybe... Wait, hang on. Let me just think about this for a second. I was going to say Tom, but I think Nick, you go.
What was the question? Okay. What do I enjoy? I think the cool thing, the best part about it is that the answer to that question probably changes on a sort of yearly to half.
What are you enjoying now?
I'm really enjoying, to be honest, the high-level strategic business sort of directional management. So looking at how to influence culture. We're looking internally at what our culture is, how it's grown organically, and how we need to take it forward. And with the experience that we have now and the knowledge and sort of the leveling up that we've done, I think we have more control over what it needs to be. So those sort of top-level things, you know, look... It's difficult to put in words, but I think right now the funnest part is figuring out who we are. And
it's the thinking stuff.
Yeah, it's the thinking. It's the strategic top, the stuff at the top that you know.
Do you two sit and hammer these ideas out daily?
Not quite daily, but we did have a great session yesterday. So we do sit pretty frequently and, you know, talk through this stuff. And
how
we do a lot of thinking independently.
How do you vary responsibilities between the two of you?
Okay, so Tom's always been... in the early days, we pretty much shared everything, but Tom is very strong on the sales side and new business development, and I've leant more into the operational stuff, looking after HR, building, making sure the business sort of runs, but we both support each other, so it's not a complete delineation. So I'll get involved in some new business, and he'll get involved in ops, but generally speaking, that's kind of where the line is, yeah.
Isn't it interesting that so many businesses that have become tremendous successes, it's usually two people?
Yeah. I've been thinking about that a lot. I mean, I think it's really hard to be a founder on your own doing something.
It's lonely.
And also, there's no one there to check you. Because if you grow quickly, it can be quite tough sometimes with success to be modest and self-reflecting about your position and how you've changed as a person. And I think that's what I get a lot out of our relationship, because Nick is always there to tell me I'm being an asshole, and that's important.
Daily.
Do you do that?
Daily.
Hourly, really. Yeah.
We have a WhatsApp thread with me calling him.
Assholes.
Asshole. Hey, buddy, just letting you know. Remember.
So it hasn't become harder to have those honest conversations, because I do think a lot of people in business, as they start to grow and as they become you know, bigger and more successful, and they start to have more staff that they're responsible for and all the rest of it, that they do tend to ease off on the detail, stop paying attention to the little things which they would have been annoyed with in the beginning. Mm. They stop being honest with each other sometimes.
No, I think I don't think I would have made it this far if the nature of the way we communicate hadn't matured and leveled up to the point it has. It's the point where, I mean, I live with my girlfriend who I've been with for about 5 years. I think Tom knows me better. I can be more direct and honest. He sees almost a truer version of me because I feel like I can just almost go straight from like lizard brain to words in his face and speak completely directly and openly.
That old lizard brain.
He's very good at taking stuff. Doesn't get too offended. And I think when we're so deep in this business, we know that anything that we say to each other is in the interest of the business. So, yeah.
Hey, did you spend some time with Jon Snow from Game of Thrones?
Oh, my God. That's amazing.
Who have you been speaking to?
I know this. You, wow. Tell me about Jon Snow.
Because you know Jon, right?
Yeah, that's a great story.
You know nothing, Jon Snow. Go on.
Okay, the story. So I think it was London last year, 2016. We were over there for some work. I stayed on the weekend to spend some time with a friend who lives there. And we were at a picnic in London Fields. Yeah. And the sort of group of people that we were with, one or two of them works in film and knew Jon Snow, and he happened to be walking past.
Kit Harington is his real name.
Kit Harington?
No, Jon Snow.
Sorry.
Yeah, I called him Jon Snow. And he just sort of called him over, and he came and sat down with us, and we drank a few beers, and yeah, hung out for the afternoon.
That's so cool. Crazy. Were you worried about what to talk to him about?
I was
you
shaking.
You didn't want to go too big on Game of Thrones because you don't want to throw the guy out,
I was kind of quietly advised not to really bring it up, but then after like an hour, eventually
I couldn't help it.
I was like, because it was right.
You're fucking Jon Snow.
It was right in the middle of the season as well.
Spoiler alert: if you haven't watched season 6, anyone listening, block your ears. It was right after where you thought he died, and we weren't sure if he was going to come back.
That's in the past. If people haven't caught up with that by now,
I don't know how this works. So
yeah,
cool.
Don't worry.
Okay, cool.
But if you haven't watched season 6 and you expect everybody to shut up about it so you don't get it spoiled for you, you've got the most selfish view of the world that any human being has ever had. Everyone's going to kowtow to you and your watching habits. Get over yourself.
I agree with you. Thank you for clarifying my position.
Sorry, got me off.
No,
so, okay, so what did you talk to him about?
Shit, man. He actually had a lot of questions to ask. He was a really cool guy.
Did he ask about South Africa?
Asked about South Africa. Rugby? He follows rugby.
Okay.
He actually follows New Zealand rugby, even though he's a British dude.
Well, they're successful, and we're not.
Yeah. I can't really remember. I was, to be honest, shaking with like excitement. Yeah. I felt like I was in a parallel dimension. I'm a big fan. I love that show.
Me
too. Yeah, it was really cool.
Wouldn't it be brilliant if the Khaleesi walked past as well?
That would have been too much, actually.
Your brain would have probably exploded at that point.
Yeah.
You mentioned gaming earlier.
Yes.
So, listen, these days there's so many gadgets, there's so many distractions, but I love it. I mean, it's part of what makes it exciting to kind of get on your phone or get on your laptop and see what there is out there. What kind of crap do you collect? I mean, do you have gadgets and nonsense at home? When you were with my broadband, you must have also collected a heap of shit.
Yeah, I mean, I used to be super into it, like actually more enthusiast, like PC level, so building computers, so graphics cards, CPUs, RAM.
Yeah, so you could have fast processing of the graphics.
Like
and
overclocking
all
them. I remember when I was like
12. You have cooling things.
I have my PC now is water cooled, yes.
See?
It's awesome. It's
how do I know my customer?
But beyond that, so I'm actually a lot on the PlayStation these days. What am I playing at the moment? Oh no, I just got a Nintendo the Switch, which is awesome. So there's a new Mario game, which is like amazing. It's really cool.
Isn't it amazing how gaming is just? It's bigger than movies. It's bigger than music.
It's crazy. I believe it's. Well, I mean, it's obviously my subjective passion, but I think it's the greatest, most developed form of entertainment that we have.
And it's really, really good at making your brain work.
Yeah.
This is what people don't understand about games, and I keep telling them, I mean, I don't play a lot of them. When I do, it's those, you know, I like to build things like a sim sort of cities and, you know, those kinds of games. I'm not big on the shooting games or any of that stuff. Mm. But they make you think that you have to plan, you have to go through things, and there are you're putting in a huge amount of time and you want to win. Mm. And it teaches you things like strategy and planning and investment and all that kind of thing. I think it's terrific. If I had a kid now, I would be forcing them to play games.
Yeah, I think especially games like that. So there's so many genres, but like the general sort of management genres. So there's games where you can build your own theme parks.
Brilliant.
There's a game that I got into when I was about 11 or 12, which so many of the fundamentals, they taught me more about running this business than anything else. It was called Theme Hospital.
Theme Hospital.
Sort of cartoony game by a company called Bullfrog, and you basically had to build, manage, run a hospital. So putting resources into R&D and like setting up, hiring doctors, running it like a full-on business.
I remember that game.
Yeah, I think it fundamentally got me kind of hooked on businesses and strategic sort of management stuff, which is with me today in this business. So yeah, I agree with you. Yeah.
What sort of stuff are you into, like outside of work?
This is going to sound really boring.
Go on.
I have a three-year-old, so I don't have time for anything else.
You don't. I've seen your wife's Instagram, and those children. I mean, your kid is very cute and everything.
Thank you. Children
take every moment of your time.
He's very busy.
Yeah,
it's very rewarding.
A cute kid though,
but he's very busy. Yeah,
three.
He's tricky. 4 in February. Yeah, so I mean that. And this is a super nerdy admission, but I'm going to do it anyway. I really enjoyed having fish and fish tanks when I was a kid. I know it's weird. So I went out and bought one like 6 months ago. It sits on my desk at work.
A little.
Like a salt water with coral and everything.
Some crummy little fish tank.
This is legit though.
I would have thought by now you would have built some decent, like a wall of fish.
We don't even have a single fish in the fish tank.
There's no fish.
We have some shrimp. I'm taking it slowly.
There's a shrimp.
Very precise. Very precise. Anyway, so yeah, that's I enjoy that.
That is so lame.
Yeah, it's pretty stupid.
How do you even explain that to people when they walk into your office? And it's sitting on your desk that you do your work on?
It's like behind my desk. Now that I'm reflecting on this question, I kind of have these like, I get into something for 6 months, then I get bored and I move on. So I'm that person.
Well, I'm sorry I even asked about your hobbies because I'm bored too. No, but you do yoga.
I don't. I don't do yoga.
You don't?
No. Who told you that?
You do yoga.
Okay, I do yoga. I'm very passionate about Bikram yoga.
I've got lots of information about you.
I have done yoga.
I've been scarring. I've got stuff on you. Listen, let me tell you.
I got very flexible at one point.
I've got information here that the CIA don't have.
You know what I do? I fall into the sprite while I'm cycling, which I did on Sunday.
Yeah, but
off a bridge.
You cycle. Okay, now that's a thing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a terrible thing to do with your time. But
I thought so, and then I tried it, and then...
You love it.
I really enjoy it, yeah. Yeah.
How much time do you spend cycling?
Not as much as I'd like. I probably spend at the moment 3-4 hours on the bike a week, so it's not too bad. But, I mean, we're doing the Argus in March, Nick and I.
Are you two both going to do the Argus?
Yes, sir.
If they do the Argus.
Oh, we did 94.7.
Yeah.
Which I was quite stoked about, because at the beginning of the year, I hadn't even ridden a bicycle since I was a
kid. Can we not talk about that? They shut down Joburg. It's outrageously selfish.
It's kind of like if you can't beat him, join him, because I felt the same way.
No, dude.
Get a bike.
No, I will not. I will not be dragged into this. It's like a pyramid.
It's a cult.
It's a pyramid. Yeah,
it is. You're all the Madoffs of bicycles.
You have to get three family members involved.
No, I won't. In any case, my family would probably disown me if I had to do that stupid.
Speaking of the Madoffs, this is a total different direction. I was on a plane and I watched Robert De Niro's new movie where he depicts Bernie Madoff, and I just wondered what the hell is going on with Robert De Niro and his choices of roles.
I think
he's just taking
money wherever he can get it.
Didn't he get divorced? He just like needs a lot of money right now.
But I thought he was good in that movie, didn't you think?
I just thought it was a bad movie. He was good because he's Robert De Niro. He's always good.
Yeah.
The movie, I mean, it's a bad story though.
But then he does like that grandpa one with Zac Efron.
That was terrible.
Like, what the fuck are you doing? Yeah. You've got a great reputation. Why would you be in this crap movie?
Yeah.
Maybe he's just stopped caring.
He doesn't care.
Cashing in. He doesn't give a shit. Oh. Like, his ego is so beyond.
He's the Johnny Depp of old white male actors, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, because Johnny Depp cashed in a while ago as well.
Yeah, right? He's just doing
Pirates of the Caribbean. Basically.
Johnny Depp used to be the actor that everybody looked up to, and they were like, this is the most talented young man in Hollywood, blah, blah, blah. Those Pirates of the Caribbean, how many are there? 20 of them now?
I think there's 23.
And that shitty character he plays, it's always drunk, that's based on Keith Richards.
Horrible. That must be the easiest character to play.
But he's been doing it for just that character for like 10 years now.
It's ridiculous.
I think he's confused.
I would be so embarrassed if I were him. You know, if you keep doing the same thing for 7 years without changing anything, you lack imagination.
Yeah.
Be better, Johnny Depp.
Right.
I'm sure he's surely doing other movies. No?
What do you guys think about cryptocurrencies?
Oh, this is a good conversation because we are deep. You're deep into it right now.
You put a whole lot of money in.
I just don't want to say I'm into Bitcoin because that's what everyone's saying.
Yeah, I know. But be honest with me. When did you get in? How interested are you? And are you checking it all the time?
So I got in. I started putting a little bit of money in around August, September.
Of this year?
Yeah.
Okay.
So quite late.
Me too.
But
exactly the same time.
But still done amazingly well. It's crazy.
Run from the Creative Council was in here the other day. He said to me, you're not a genius if you've made money off of crypto and the like. Yeah. Everyone has made money.
Everyone has.
I follow him on Twitter now.
He's great, huh?
Yeah, you actually mentioned that. I started following him. I think there's a lot of money to be made in the short position in trading it. I think expecting it not to burst is stupid. I think there's going to be a lot of tears. I'm terrified. I think about how many people are using like their credit cards and cash out of their bonds.
That's stupid. And taking out extra mortgages. And can you imagine?
That's when there's going to be real tears. But like, yeah, I've made good money in the short term. The problem is, if you got in around August, then you know kind of how whatever you put in is appreciated. And you become attached to the value. And so you have to balance like, do I take out my initial investment out? Yeah. Or do I keep it in there because it's still appreciating? Like, what's going to happen, I guess?
Well, I don't know the answer to that. I don't think anyone does. But what appeals to me about it is that it isn't controlled by any central authority.
Yeah.
I like that because it feels so much more democratic and realistic. It feels like, you know, if you want to sell me something and I want to buy it, I can use Bitcoin and we don't need government and import duties and taxations and central banks and God knows what other people getting involved in our deal. This must be a Nick or a Tom and a Gareth deal. That's it.
Yeah.
Right? We don't need everybody else.
We don't need brokers and people charging us for
get all these middlemen, these parasites.
Yeah.
Get them out of the system. Flush them out. And for that reason alone, I don't know if I agree with you about the trade versus long-term hold. I think you've got to keep some skin in the game here because I do think it might not become a currency. It might not become the way that we buy and sell things, but it might become a repository of value like gold has become.
Mm.
And maybe it's in between the two.
Yeah.
And that's a value all on its own.
Yeah, listen, I'm definitely holding. I personally wouldn't want to go much deeper into holding Bitcoin than I am now just because I'm a little bit nervous. It's been surging so ridiculously in the last 2 weeks. It's unsettling. I mean, people were saying $10,000 by March 2018. 2 months ago. And the response to that was like, that's crazy. What's
it's already gone 17. Well, 16 something this morning.
It's wobbly. Nothing can maintain itself. But what I love about it, I'm with you, the fundamentals, the exchange, like the fact that you can move money anywhere in the world for almost no exchange fees compared to what it would cost you using regular banking. It's amazing.
A friend of mine went online today and she said she bought I'll read this to you because I thought it was fascinating.
Now I want to go check what it's on.
I'll look for you in a second.
My personal balance, I'm like terrified that
I bought some sunglasses online from a South African site. Get to the payment screen and I'm offered the option to pay with Bitcoin.
Amazing.
Do so by scanning the QR code of the Luno app. Transaction clears in 2 minutes. Goods will be delivered tomorrow. The future is here. Yeah. Isn't that great?
That is pretty cool. I don't know you could do that here.
It's happening. Like Pick and Pay started accepting Bitcoin.
I don't know if that's going to work. I don't think it's widespread enough yet.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it's a future hedging on
Yeah, but forget about whether or not you're going to have practical use for it every day. It's a great way to accumulate value and to have something that's stuck away that, you know, for example, you can program the thing. You've got a kid now. 3-year-old, right? When he turns 21, you buy him a Bitcoin now and you let it only vest when he's 21. Not even you can change the rules of that.
Mm.
And one day, if it's worth $200,000 or $1 million or $5 million, it's his. Mm. And it can only happen on his 21st birthday. Now, if something happens to you in between, that's how it's going to be. If something doesn't happen to you in between, that's how it's going to be. That's terrific.
Yeah, I think that's a cool idea. Mm.
No estate duties, no lawyers, no executors, none of that crap. You get a Bitcoin on your 21st birthday.
Mm.
I like the fact that it's deregulated. I think the challenge is associated with the fact that right now you can't cash it out and you can't make everyday purchases despite, you know, those examples that you shared. So you're in for a tax event
eventually,
no matter what. But maybe not in the future. Maybe not when Joda is 21. Maybe he can scan a QR code. I hope they figure out something better than QR codes.
QR codes are horrible.
Those are the worst. Mm. I thought we saw the back of them now. Remember they were on billboards, like
everywhere.
20 meters up in the air, there's a QR code.
How do I get that? How do I scan that? My phone doesn't pick that up, idiots.
But I don't know. I really like Bitcoin and crypto and super into it as well. I've got a couple of wild theories about where it maybe came from. I have some doubts, and also the truth of the matter is that the computing power required to manage the blockchain as the value increases and a single Bitcoin gets diversified into more and more pieces is going to be impossible. So everyone's throwing around these ridiculous stats that come from nowhere that, you know, Morocco's, you know, annual power is what's required to run. That's bullshit. But the reality of the matter is that, you know, we aren't following Moore's law in terms of computing power anymore. We've come off of that law now. So computing power isn't, you know, running exponentially anymore. And if this thing gets bigger and bigger and bigger, we have a finite amount of resource in terms of computing power. And what happens when it's too big to be validated anymore? And we're already seeing
too big to fail. I see something horrible. No,
I mean, we're already seeing some examples because, you know, the authentication takes longer than it should now.
But what you're saying is a perfectly healthy, sensible point of view. If you came in here and I asked you that same question, you said, "Oh, I'm all for it. It's fantastic. It's a winner. It's a guaranteed success, 100%. There'd be something wrong with you. And if you said, on the other hand, this is a terrible idea. It's never going to work. It's a stupid Ponzi scheme. Get out. Mm-hmm. I'd also think you're an idiot. Somewhere in between is the point of view that I think counts. And any skeptical person, any person who's just a little bit nervous, is probably the sensible one.
Yeah, I think so.
All right, you two. So what's the plan for Clockwork Media?
I think we're going to hopefully have a big year next year. You know, it's funny if you're not familiar with advertising, then you won't know the little bits and pieces that these agencies seem to be cut into. But the reality is that every agency aspires to be the lead agency on an account and kind of help move the business that they're working with strategically forward. And you know, we've been working a lot in PR and content and digital, and generally speaking, it's changing.
What's the future content?
Future kind of,
we'll finish this question about what's next for Clockwork.
That is a tough question. I think it's impossible to answer. The only realistic way of answering it is saying that the future of content is that there's going to be more of it, and it's going to be written less and less, and going to be more in terms of visual, like video, etc.
And audio,
yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm a huge podcast listener, for example. So, you know, listen to this.
I always say to people, it's something that you can do while you're doing other things.
Totally.
You know, I have to be watching my screen if I'm on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Snapchat, or on a blog or on a website. But I can listen to this while I'm doing other stuff. And I find, like, long-form journalism is moving towards podcasts.
Oh, yeah.
Because if you want to have...
easily digestible.
You want to have these conversations. Who's going to read 20 pages of us talking to each other?
Anytime I see a New Yorker article... I love the New Yorker.
Yeah, you want to.
But it's just
to.
Like,
you
oh, I can't
the best
do this. 5,000 words. I don't have time for this,
possible.
Scrolling on my phone. Yeah. But I think one thing that is the future of content is that it's going to change in format to become more journalistically orientated. And that's where I see the future of journalism going, becoming more independent, more separated for media houses, more sort of marketing orientated. I think
and more niched.
More niche. Much more niche.
Like if you're the expert in theme hospital, there will be a blog, a podcast, a video, a YouTube.
YouTube's a
series.
Perfect example.
It's everything that you want, there's going to be someone doing that content.
I follow, it's insane, and this is a great example. I follow on YouTube, also a big fan of YouTubers, some of them. I follow this lady called Taylor Dean. She lives in Texas. She's big into, yes, it's embarrassing, fish and animals and stuff like that.
Right.
But she has this YouTube channel that she started 8 months ago. Granted, she's very good looking, but she got 1 million followers talking about fish in 8 months.
You've got a problem.
But come on, there's a thing, there's something there.
Fish are not that interesting.
They are not.
They really are not.
Go look at a YouTube channel.
We don't even have a fish in our office tank.
There's no
That's
fish.
The saddest part.
You've got a tank
anyway.
We have
no
a
fish.
Shrimp and a snail.
I wish I'd never said anything about
lame.
This. This is like one of those admissions I have to be really drunk to.
Okay. I want to give Nick a chance to talk about where he thinks Clockwork Media is going, and then you guys can go and get back to work, because for God's sake, we've got things to do.
Okay, so it's 4 years in, and we've grown by over 100% every year running. I think our appetite to do that kind of growth is not really there anymore. I think we've reached what we wanted to be more or less in terms of scale and size, and that is being big enough to execute. And now it's about building quality, execution, you know, fulfilling the sort of through the line view that we have of what marketing and advertising should be, and then pushing every single piece of it as hard as we can so that we do the best work in the industry that's really happening. That's kind of our goals. So I think it's going from like a size and scale goal orientation of the last few years to really let's just like, you know, slow down the growth and become really, really good at what we do. So that's kind of
focus on quality.
Yeah.
It's awesome. All right, gents, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks, Gareth.
It was nice of you to spend some time with me. I think we'll see each other around a little bit more.
Cool.
Hope
and
so,
all the best for the next year and everything that brings.
Thanks so much, man. Appreciate it. Thanks for having us.
This is CliffCentral.com.